What a night for Luka that most have called his finest hour to this juncture.
You also add
that says something.
Yeah, and you add into that that the turnovers, which had been a problem during the restart, were basically non-existent. And he had it all. Outside, unstoppable getting to the rim. Passes that just seemed otherworldly. I mean, you know, the one that everybody has been talking about is the between the legs one. But there were several that when he is driving and he is in, you know, his momentum is taking him in one direction where he just turns around and flips it back out behind the three-point line in a variety of different angles. He is a, you know, you always talk about like Magic Johnson and Jason Kidd and those guys having eyes in the back of their heads. He's one of those guys, and it's just weird. And here's what I was thinking about after that game, because it just seems so singular. At what point did the Chicago, LA media, wherever, you know, pick a town that had a superstar, where you stop coming in here with your jaw wide open saying, oh my God, or is that just part of the business and you never stop doing that? So for 15 years, did Chicago, they had to have. It never stopped where no. They showed up in there and they're like, I can't believe what we just saw. And yeah. The Showtime Lakers, like, what did Magic just do?
Right.
Or Bird, whoever it is, where you know, we did it with Dirk for 17 years of great years.
Right.
And I don't know. This just seems like another animal, and it just seems absurd that at 21 we're talking about this kid this way.
Yeah, so there's a lot here. There was the pass, I'm sure it will be called for a long time. There was a stat line, 36 points, 14 rebounds, 19 assists, which is the youngest player in NBA history to have a 35, 10, and 15 game. And he passed Michael Jordan to do it. He is also, with 22, the Mavericks. Oh, no, wait a minute. This is old news. He passed back several months ago. He became the Mavericks' all-time triple-double leader, and he's the youngest outright triple-double leader in NBA history. I mean, they're all ridiculous, right? He has 17 this season. Youngest player in NBA history to lead the NBA outright in triple-doubles of all time, surpassing Magic Johnson and Jason Kidd and Oscar Robertson, who were all at least 60 or 70 days older than him. Magic, formerly the youngest, to lead the NBA in triple-doubles in a year when he was 21 and 227 days. Luka, 21 and 168. So, again, we've been doing this since he was 19.
Yeah.
So now he's 21, and I don't know how long we're going to do it, but at his age, he is not good. He is historically great at age 19, at age 20, and now at age 21 in the NBA. If this continues for the next several years, you are witnessing in your city one of the greatest basketball players who's ever lived. Now, I hesitate going too crazy, but I don't know what too crazy is anymore, Corby, because now there are legitimate, neutral discussions on, is he a top five NBA player right now? Is he a top three NBA player right now? And at some point it does get too rich, but where is that point anymore?
I don't know. I really don't know. And
because here's an example for you. I'm sorry to cut you off there. I want to hear what you have to say. But my example would be, I have often said I would not trade him straight up for Giannis, and that'd be the only player in the NBA I would say that about. And then you watch him on Saturday and you just say, I still have massive questions about Giannis in the final 2 minutes of a game. I'd have no questions about everything about Giannis' game. He is probably the best defensive player in the league, and he's one of the best offensive players in the league. And yeah, I mean, you'd like better than 65% from the line, but he's an unbelievable basketball player and a singular talent. And now I think I probably would trade him straight up to get Luka. Which I don't think I've ever said before, because that is insane to say. And yet, I feel like now it's at least a really good conversation.
So, the 30-point triple-double stat, he now, that's his 12th of the year. The rest of the league doesn't have 12 of those, by the way.
I'm sorry, what?
The rest of the league doesn't have 12 of those.
So the rest of the league combined?
Yeah.
Has not produced 12 30-point triple-doubles?
That was the case before the restart.
Goodness.
And I'm assuming we're still holding firm that he leads in that category the entire league.
That makes sense.
It doesn't. It's very hard to do, obviously. People, you know, will tell you that stats are cheap and Russell Westbrook averaged a triple-double a couple of years ago. And yeah, there's no doubt Russ did that. But some of these numbers, like, you know, that no one has ever put up these numbers ever before in the game that he had against the Bucks.
So most of these offensive facilitators, not facilitators, but guys that all of the offense runs through, they're always falling short with rebounds. Am I correct to say that?
I mean, there was a stat going into the game Saturday that there were four players just in the bubble that averaged 30 points and 10 rebounds. And three of them were playing in that game because it's Luka, Giannis, and Kristaps, and Joel Embiid is the other. So of those, guys capable of getting double-digit assists, probably just Giannis and Luka. I don't know how many Giannis has, but I assume he's got more than a couple triple-doubles this year of 30-point variety, but I don't have any idea. That's an interesting list.
I know LeBron had three or four before the restart, and I don't think he's had one since then.
I guess the point of why Saturday is different, because I'll be honest, the triple-double stat is interesting.
Yeah,
I don't know that it means nearly as much to me as it seems to mean to sports media, just because teams are now routinely, maybe I should be careful here, it doesn't seem that weird for a team to have 100 points after three quarters now in NBA games, and that has to mean that all statistics are amplified or grown just completely out of volume and pace that the NBA now has that it never had before. I mean, we were talking about a 55-point performance from the Utah Jazz in the NBA Finals in The Last Dance. Those days are long, long gone, and the three-point line has changed the game forever, and therefore there probably are way more triple-doubles because there are way more points being scored, and that just makes sense to me intuitively, although I can't prove it. That said, I needed to see some real crunch time performance, and I really liked what I saw there. I think the Bucks have their own issues at crunch time, and I think that's the great key and the great difference between champions and really good teams. But to see Luka do what he did on that stage in overtime and to see the Mavs get a little more comfortable in their own skin, and I'm not saying they've slayed all the dragons of crunch time, because – next game, we could get frustrated again, but he rises to the occasion, man. And it's just a matter, it's not a matter of if he can do it. It's a matter of his brain figuring out the best way to stick the sword into your chest at the moment of truth. And I think that only comes from losing a few times and finding out what doesn't work and then arriving at these things that generally do work. And I just think that's called figuring it out at this level.
And beyond him individually, the team desperately needed something good to happen in the final 3 minutes of a basketball game. And I swear to God, probably you were right there with me. I was getting ready to hit send on a tweet that said, if in the final few minutes you never score and the other team scores on every shot, is that a good thing? Because that's what it looked like was happening with Milwaukee. They were draining everything and Dallas couldn't do anything. And suddenly,
Maxie, they go on a
9-0 run to close the game and score the first 7 points of overtime. And it was just like, wow, 16 points in a row. But they desperately needed that to happen. They needed something good to happen at the end of regulation. It's not like the Stars needed that goal desperately the other night. The Mavericks needed it against a good defensive team, and they got it. And, yeah, you mentioned Maxie. Think about all the big moments Maxie's had in the bubble this year. Now, he had one that is probably going to be remembered more than any other, and that is blowing that box out on the Covington layup against Houston in the first game. But
it happens.
Since then, he was the only one making any crunch time shots.
Yep.
And then, you know, you saw it today in the huge comeback against Utah. You saw it the other night against Milwaukee when they need a catalyst, when they need something good to happen. It's like Maxey's there for them.
Yeah, if you can find a guy to make all those plays, you know, for loose balls or at the rim with a block or something, and then they can cold blood a three on a reasonable regular occasion, especially if they're his size. That's
three and D.
That's pretty rare, and that's clearly what they need to find, and that's why I'm a little leery of losing Tim Hardaway, and I don't know if that will happen. I don't know if, but I also don't know how much I want to pay him to stay. It's he's one of those weird players where if you can upgrade, great, but if you lose him and you don't get the right upgrade, then you're just running to stand still. And
you'll know a lot in the next month about Tim Hardaway.
Yeah, probably. And I, you know, then you have to worry about, is he careering with an expiring contract? I don't know. I don't know all these things, but
what if Dorian Finney-Smith, who showed up huge the other night, had the game of his life? And you know what? When you have 19 assists, you're going to need a guy like Dorian Finney-Smith to hit shots when he's open. And he did. And I don't know where, you know, I mean, you talk about luck. Every team's got, it seems like, a Dorian Finney-Smith story, an undrafted dude that just, you're like, how did this guy slip through the cracks of the NBA? He had a monster game, and I think that, you know, imagine having Seth Hardaway and Finney-Smith at all times surrounding the three-point line, ready to kill you if they're all just remotely going well. We talked about Hardaway and Seth. Add Dorian to that mix, too. If he's shooting well.
Do you trust him?
No, of course not. I don't. I know, but I mean.
I got to do better. I got to get a better shooter.
But he's a stopper on defense.
He is. Yeah he provides quite a bit.
That's his value.
Right, and that's trying to find the mix, I guess, is this next piece. I want him to shoot like Buddy Hield, but I want him to defend like Dorian, right? And I want that player all in the same skin, and I want him available, and, you know.
Yeah,
that,
good luck.
Yeah, exactly. Good luck, but that's how careful you have to be about this final piece. Chris Middleton might have made some sense, but I don't know, man. There's a lot that leaves you wanting about his game, and he ended up getting all the money from Milwaukee to stay, and you know, they thought maybe Malcolm Brogdon, and they thought there were a couple other ideas, but it's just you got to get that one right because you're kind of locked in after that.
Yeah, and Kristaps, speaking of him, you know, they went to him a lot more in crunch time. He didn't do too great, but they went to him, which I think is a big first step.
Yep.
Instead of just ignoring him overall. But Luka,
so
I don't
much
know,
fun.
Man. Just he's
it's
crazy.
It's unbelievable how good he is, and he just continues to outdo himself. It's a
fun.
Unreal.
We're lucky.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.